This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
It is Danny Gallant, Michael Bumpus, sitting in for Paul Gallant today. We got DJ Reed. We're going to talk to him coming up at 9:30. This Mariners team, I'm not sure where they're going to end up. I'm not sure if they're going to end up on the right side of 500 at the end of the season. I hope they will. I think there's some pretty strong signs that they will, given everything that they've faced in this first half of the season and the fact that they're still hanging around here. The one thing I know is that this team has some resiliency. It's got a backbone, and they've been able to talk about having a good chin with fighters, right? Can you take a punch? This baseball team, this team's got a solid chin. It's got a granite chin because they've taken some huge blows in terms of injury, and they keep on slugging away.
And who do you – so who takes responsibility for that? Is that the Poto? Is it service? Is it the older guys on the roster? Because when you have these young guys, you take a hit on the chin. You've never been punched before. You're like, oh, my God. Is this what this is like? So who gets the credit for this? Is it a collective effort? What do you think?
Service deserves some credit. Service deserves most of the credit here. Because if this was a season where, look, they've had some promising performances. Logan Gilbert looks really good.
Yeah.
But if this was a year where Evan White, who, by the way, looks like he suffered a setback, he left Tacoma. He's back working with trainers in Seattle. It might be another week before he's back in the lineup. If this was a case of your young players, Kelnick came up and hitting, then you're like, hey, this is the development system, right? Mm-hmm. This is the talent acquisition. You've gotten some horsepower here. But it's not really been those guys that have led this. I think it's your manager. And I think it's either identifying or cultivating a toughness in your team to keep fighting and to keep everybody focused and to keep people, because baseball teams can reach tipping points and you can see it where kind of the bottom just gives way and you're like, okay, they've had too many losses, they've suffered too many injuries, their spirit's kind of broken. And this team, despite having some injuries, I just go back to that three-game series in San Diego where they lost by like a collective total three-game sweep, 26-7. They just got obliterated. He's kept this team focused and coming back when they look dead. I go to the manager. When you see a team like that develops that, where do you think it comes from?
Leadership. Uh-huh. So the manager has something to do with it. And then I would say leadership within, you know, the team as well. And what I'm seeing, too, is you always have a couple guys a year who step up, who lead, that you don't really expect to lead. And this year is JP. I mean, you find a bat in JP. You know his glove was going to be solid. Now you see him. I see him being more vocal. Seems like he's having more fun. And that stuff is contagious. So it's a combination, right? Everyone has to be on the same page and believe. And you hear Service talk. He's so, like, just even. So even kill. Like I never hear him super excited. I never hear him low. It's like he understands the process and he communicates. It feels like he communicates that process and expectations to the players. So give Service some love, the old heads, and then that leader who pops up every year that you don't expect, and this year is JP.
JP has become an extremely important player for this team. And this year started with that question about, okay, is he potentially a long-term shortstop for you? Mm-hmm. He's certainly shown a great glove. And he's answered that, but I think you're right. I think JP Crawford deserves a lot of credit. If Service gets the lion's share of it for the resiliency, number two is JP Crawford. He started this season hitting ninth. He started this season with, they asked him to buy into that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look, he's a young player who's been someone who's emerged. He won a gold glove last year. He's worked on some things that the team's asked him to. He was a one-time huge prospect. And they're like, hey, would you bat at the bottom of the order? And you need to buy into that. And he did. And he's moved up in part because of his performance and honestly in part because they haven't had other dudes. And he's hit his way back to the top of the lineup. If he had approached that role differently or taken that as a slap in the face, that we might not have seen the kind of blossoming that we've seen. Instead, he took it in stride or as a challenge, and he's clobbered his way back to the top of the lineup. He's absolutely, if you're going to pinpoint, Service has called him the quarterback of their team. Yeah. He's done a huge amount.
That mental toughness. I mean, we hear that term all the time, right? You got to be mentally tough. But what does that really mean? That means batting ninth and your team pretty much saying, like, you're the worst, man. We're gonna hide you in the bottom of this lineup. And grinding your way up, still performing on defense, working your way up in the batter's box. That's just mental toughness. And that's something that this team needs to have and really needed to have coming into the season when everyone's telling them, look, low expectations. You're not going to win games. Let's get out here and develop. So to show up every day, you're batting late in the lineup. Everyone's telling you this team isn't going to do anything. For you to be consistent, show up to work every day, grind. Now you're batting leadoff. This shows mental toughness by the kid.
It does show mental toughness. And mental toughness is what brought the Mariners through last night's game. Justin Dunn looked good for the first two innings.
Mm-hmm.
He leaves in the third inning. At that point, they haven't given up a run. They're not trailing. They end up falling behind over the course of the game. They have to turn it over to a bullpen start. They've been trying to get away from bullpen starts. I mean, I feel like they've been for 3 weeks. Scott Service has been saying, "Okay, that should be the end of the bullpen starts. That should be the end of the bullpen starts." This is a team that lost James Paxton, has lost L.J. Newsome, has also ended up losing Margavichus. Like, those are three of their top seven starters when this year started. They've lost because of injury. Now you throw Justin Dunn on that category as well. Not only that, but Jake Fraley wasn't available. They fall behind. They fall behind against a team that has not just the best record in the American League, but they have the best bullpen. That's what their success is built around. This is precisely the kind of comeback that you're not mm-hmm. supposed to be able to make against this team. What do the Mariners do? They start digging in. Luis Torrens clobbers a homer. I think we've got Ty France's homer, which, by the way, he'd gone a long time since homering. He's come back and he's been hitting, and then he cranks one. It didn't quite get to the upper deck, but it got to that walkway that was out there, that concourse out beyond the left field wall. Ty France cuts the deficit to one run with this absolute blast.
1-1 here to France. Breaking ball swung on and driven deep to left. Taking a look at it is a Rosarena, and bye-bye right in Edgar's. A two-run homer by Ty France. And the Mariners have closed to within 5-4 here in the sixth for Ty's fifth home run. RBI's 26 and 27. Second home run in the last 3 days.
And then you get into the ninth inning. You're down one. You get two runners on. Shed Long gets there where he's got two strikes on him, Bump. And yeah. He modifies his approach. He goes with the pitch. He hits a double that ties the game. And at that point, you felt like here was Shed Long, best piece of hitting yesterday. Two strikes, and he ends up doubling in a run.
Fairbanks assigned the set, delivers, swing and a line drive to left field, down the line for a base hit. Moore rounding third, being waved in. He's going to score around to third, diving into the bag. Bowers, the throw in by a Rosarena, cut off by the shortstop Walls. Long in at second base with an RBI double. Shed has tied it up at 5-5 here in the bottom of the ninth inning. Holy smokes, what a big base hit by Shed Long, his second hit of the night, and his second double ties it in the bottom of the ninth.
Awesome. They end up winning on Kyle Seager's single. Once Shed Long had that double, it's like they're winning this game. They're not losing this game. You're not going to come this far and end up losing the game. Runners on second and third. Kyle Seager's supposed to have the day off, gets the single. I was pumped when it happened. I was just like, good for this team. This team's got some resolve.
Yeah, that was exciting. They needed that. And it's crazy that Seager's just sitting there like, man, we got a great game on our hands, guys. You know, keep the good times rolling. Get the tap on the shoulder like, hey, we need you. And then you win the game for him. Again, I mentioned it earlier. That's just being a professional, just being ready. You never know when your number's going to be called. You never know when your team's going to need you. He stepped up. Nice to see Shed Long. He's battled back from injuries as well. That's another guy who's been injured. I mean, did you say there are over 50 guys in this organization that have been on the injury list at one point?
No, they've had 50 players. 50. Appear in games for the Mariners. They were the first team to have 50 different players having appeared in a major league game, which just gives you an indication of how much turnover there's been at the top. And it has to do, I mean, some guys have moved because of Kelnick coming up and then going back down, but the vast majority of this is they've had to patch things because of injury.
You got 50 guys.
50 dudes.
Like, if you can't be consistent with your roster, it's hard to be consistent as a team when it comes to wins. So, again, just going with the flow. You know, taking your punches, taking your lumps, but understanding, like, look, we can still be competitive. No matter who's out there, let's still be competitive. Oh, we need the bullpen to win for us. All right, let's be competitive. It's fun to watch. The highs are highs, the lows are lows. Just weather the highs. I mean, ride the highs, weather the lows, and we'll be all right.
It would feel better for the rebuild if you had some of the contributions coming from some of the younger guys you've identified. I mean, honestly, the long-term trajectory, it would feel better if Kelenic had been contributing at the major league level. It would feel better if Evan White was playing and started hitting better. Instead, he's hurt. He's got a hip flexor injury that's taken an awful long time for him to get back. And it makes me, the more that goes on, the more I think that maybe that was something that he was dealing with through the first month of the season, and that we can't just look at, hey, he just couldn't hit, and that's a result of sort of a continuation of last year's struggles. He might have been dealing with something different, and we mentioned Evan White got pulled from his rehabilitation assignment to go back in Seattle and work on some things. He's probably a week away, 5 or 6 days away from getting back on the field there. But it's not... Don't take for granted the toughness that this team is showing, because that tells you about what Scott Service has built at the major league level in that clubhouse and the kind of approach that they have embedded with their veterans.
Danny, is this fool's gold then? Because the guys that you are trying to rely on later, Evan White, Kelenic, Marco was hurt for a while. I mean, they've been banged up. So like we said, 50 guys, different guys have suited up. So next year, when these guys are healthy, hopefully, are we going to have to go through this process again? Is this helping the process, or is it hurting with these young guys being out and other guys filling in?
It's helping, and here's why. What you worry about when you go through a rebuild is the culture that develops while you're taking the L's. Like what you, and this is true in all sports. And I remember seeing it for the first time that I saw an honest-to-goodness tear-it-down-and-rebuild was the post-Jordan Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of conversation about how the Bulls did that. And Jerry Krause, if we're being honest, the GM, there was part of him that wanted that challenge. And they ended up using two top five draft picks to get Eddie Curry and to get Tyson Chandler. And they spent years. Jamal Crawford was someone that ended up going there. They spent years trying to accumulate talent. Philadelphia is doing it right now. The concern when you do that is always what happens to the culture while you're taking the L's. Because you can have a bad culture build. It would be a better sign for the Mariners' talent level if some of these younger players, if Kyle Lewis was healthy right now and he was hitting. It would be a better sign. But just because these guys that you're relying upon or hoping are the nucleus of that talent haven't done it yet doesn't mean they won't. And by the way, it looks like your culture is really strong. It looks like you're not going to have to fight that sort of negative momentum, because that can be a real thing that happens. And when your culture, here's how an executive explained to me. When you've got a young kid and he learns that he's still going to get paid even if he loses seven straight, that can be something that's tough to overcome.
Yeah.
When they learn, because that's where you get like, I've got to get mine. Hey, I'm doing my part.
Yeah.
And finding that culture can be a really, really hard thing. And that's, if the Mariners right now were in last place in the AL West, I would look at it and tell you, hey, this is a bummer, but don't read too much into it, because none of the guys that you're counting on to make this team good are there, and they've had a lot of injuries. The fact that they're one game below 500 with all of these injuries tells me, I think they got a really good culture here. I think they're really pretty tenacious. And if those young guys start playing like we think they can, and by the way, like it's way too early to give up on or even say, most of your most talented players aren't even up yet. If they're as talented as we think and they're added to this culture, you might really have something, and maybe it'll be as soon as next year.
So the foundation is set, or being set. They're laying down the foundation right now, so it's easier for these young guys to get bumped up, get moved up, and get into an environment that's conducive to them having success. It's almost like they're below 500, but it feels like a winning environment, right? This is an environment that is going to help take this team to the next level. So I see your angle. If you're able to insert players into a culture and still have success, imagine when the ballers get healthy. Boom. I'm sold, Danny. You got me sold.
We just need to make sure they're ballers. Like that's that at the end of the day, we got to get the ball. We've got it. We got to have that. We got to have Kyle Lewis coming back and raking. Yeah. We need Jared Kelnick, who homered last night in the seventh inning, to get back up here. We do need that part of the talent to come through. It's a good sign what we've seen from Logan Gilbert. But this team's toughness should not be overlooked. It's Danny and Gallant, Michael Bumpus in for Paul. Right now, we go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
No air horns, Mora. Incapable of giving you the air horns today. What
right,
do we
guys,
got
sorry,
going on?
Sorry, having some technical difficulties here.
No worries.
Sometimes I'm like, you know, the patting your head and rubbing your stomach at the same time thing with all the buttons I'm pushing.
There's a lot of stuff going on. What do we got around the league?
All right. First up, we didn't get to this down yesterday. We talked about Robert Kendiche and whether you think he can be a contributor this year. But bottom line is, I think he's going to at least be a fun part of the team. This was him at his presser on Wednesday, attempting to answer a question, but getting a little distracted when Bobby Wagner walked by.
5-4, let's go, baby. You know how we do. Big 5-4, baby. Let's go, 5-4, Bobby. Come on. Oh, what'd you say? I apologize.
That's all right. When Bobby walks by, you got to acknowledge
You got to acknowledge greatness. It's a legend right there. Come on.
Are you a Kendiche fan? I'm finding myself pulling for him.
You know what? I went to practice yesterday and just watched him and his energy. He's running around. He's messing with dudes. I always think of this. Can I play 18 holes with this guy if he can't play and have a beer and have a good time? I think I can do that with this dude. He seems like a good time.
He is a quintessential Seahawks second chance guy.
Yeah.
Where he was a high prospect, first round draft pick. For several different reasons, it didn't work out with him in Arizona. And this is a, hey, there's no risk here.
Yep.
If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But maybe this environment reaches him. Maybe he learns a little bit of that grit or develops a little bit of that grit, or having a coach that approaches it a little bit differently, like Pete Carroll, maybe you find something here. I'm hopeful. I think I'm on the Robert Kendiche Express.
I'm with you.
All right, guys. There are reports that RG3, Robert Griffin, has reportedly sparked a bidding war between ESPN and Fox for his analyst services after some impressive auditions. What do you think of him on your television screen during NFL games?
It's tough, isn't it? I mean, I don't know how much I want to listen to Robert Griffin III. I mean,
why not? What'd he do to you?
He didn't do anything to me. Anytime he's going to criticize or be critical, there's a part of me that's going to think to myself, well, what would you know about that? Like, you know, and that's incredibly stupid for a journalist like me who has no athletic background to sort of like, well, I don't know what he's going to tell me about. But he's fitting into that former player role. And I'm not sure everything that happened with him in Washington, but it certainly didn't seem like he's ever had a great relationship with his teammates. And he certainly didn't in Washington.
Yeah, it's, you know what, quarterbacks, man. Quarterbacks, they see the game differently. They're going to get opportunities as analysts for sure, because everyone assumes they're just the smartest guys on the field. So I guess good for him, man. I never knock another man's hustle. I never knock his hustle. RG3, go ahead, get your money. Do what you got to do. Even if I don't like his analysis, go get your money, man. Hey, life after football looks good for him right now.
Now, I completely agree with that. Hey, awesome. And like I said, being a successful artist is not a prerequisite for being an art critic. Being a successful athlete is not a prerequisite for being a member of the sports media. Like, all of those. And he's accomplished way more than almost anybody else has. He's a number 2 overall draft pick. I was shocked it didn't pan out for him. I am always suspicious when athletes who were not beloved by their teammates get in the media. Like, there's always just a little bit of a, like when A-Rod was in the media, I was like, yeah, I don't know how that's going to work. And it turns out A-Rod's, I think, is really good. But when there's dudes that are not beloved by their teammates, I'm like, I'm not sure how that's going to go.
Yeah, some guys do better on their own.
Yeah.
Some guys do better in a smaller setting where they have all the limelight and don't have to depend on anybody else. You know, some guys just thrive in that. Maybe RG3, that's what he does.
All right, former Cardinals safety Antrell Roll joined the All Things Covered podcast with Patrick Peterson. And he revealed that I think most of us remember that infamous play in the Super Bowl between the Cardinals and the Steelers where James Harrison had an interception return. He revealed that he came very close to just tripping him.
I was honestly in shock. It felt like my body went numb because I'm like, damn, you know, did I speak this into existence? You know, and like, it felt like my body went numb. And honestly, when I think about it now, I'm just looking. I'm like, I honestly felt like I was going to go trip this dude. That's what I felt like. That's what I felt in my body. And I'm stopping myself. But I didn't realize how close I was, you know, to the boundary line.
Are you surprised we haven't seen that? The closest I can think of, Tomlin. Tomlin was in the field of play when Jacoby Jones was returning a punt, right? And Jones had to move and then ended up getting tackled and Tomlin got penalized. But that was because Tomlin was like looking up at the big screen.
Yeah.
There's part of me that's surprised we've never seen that happen.
Man, if Antrell was to do that, his legacy would be ruined. I mean, yeah. you just can't do that. That's like Bush League, cheater type stuff. That is so frowned upon. Yeah, I'm glad he didn't do it. I understand why he'd be close to doing that because he understands, like, this is the Super Bowl. Here's a moment right here. My team is about to go down. So I understand the thought process. I'm glad he didn't do it, though.
I am glad he... What would they do in the game? Would you give him the touchdown?
No, it's a penalty.
God,
you could stop a touchdown for sure.
What happens in soccer if there's a deliberate handball that stops a goal? They red card the dude.
Do they give
you the goal?
Nah, if you're in the box, you get a PK. But outside the box, they red card you and you're gone. Like, you think about it, it's a great idea. You can really change
seriously
the game, but your rep is ruined though.
You're done. You got to take one for the team. But if you're the If you're the team and it's a scrub, you're like, look, I'm not. Here's your chance to be a legend, and we will pay you forever for this.
If I'm on the other side, we fighting. You trip me, I'm about to score. I'm up. Hey, take your helmet off. We getting at it right now.
That is around the NFL.
You don't want to fight James Harrison either.
No, you do not want to fight James Harrison.
I need weapons and backup.
Yeah, do not want to fight James Harrison. Look, we've got an opportunity for you. In celebration of Father's Day, we want to get you to a Mariners game this summer. That's right. You get a bunch of games to choose one. Right now, the third caller at 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776 will win four tickets to an upcoming game. Don't forget, you can spend this weekend soaking up the sun at T-Mobile Park. The Mariners continue their four-game series against the Rays. They've won 3 of 4 in this homestand, including Beard Hat Night tonight. Beard Hat Night. Exceptionally exciting. Find great seats at Mariners.com. That's right. Third caller, 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. It's Danny Gallant, Michael Bumpus filling in. We got DJ Reed. He joins us next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It's Danny and Gallant, and we're joined now by a guy I'm very excited to talk with, and he's got to be feeling a ton better this year as we prepare to enter training camp, still about a month away. But DJ Reed is with us, and DJ, first of all, I want to say that all of Seattle is really, really glad you're here now and coming back to the Seahawks this season.
Oh, that's love. I appreciate that. I'm glad to be back. I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing all the fans in the stadium.
You've had a remarkable journey to get to this point in your career. We'll go into some of that, of going to Fresno State and then ended up going to a junior college. But I just want to go back to when the Seahawks claimed you, because that had to be a really tough time, followed by a lot of uncertainty, because you got hurt last year. You hurt your pec with San Francisco?
Yeah, so I tore my pec in the offseason around, I believe it was late June, early July. And then they waived me, and then the Seahawks picked me up. They claimed me off of waivers. So that whole process was pretty crazy. You know, I went from playing with the 49ers, and the Seahawks were their rivals, to all of a sudden now I'm playing for the Seahawks. So, you know, when John called me and told me, you know, welcome to Seattle, I was kind of confused, but at the same time excited because I wanted to play. So it was pretty crazy how everything happened.
It is. It's one of those. I mean, Seattle's really, really fortunate here because for San Francisco, they clearly didn't want to lose you, but they also thought, well, he's hurt, so we don't think anybody will end up claiming him. Were you bummed to be picked up because you had some success there in San Francisco and they believed in you, or were you excited about the opportunity or the option? What was your feeling when you found out you'd been claimed by Seattle?
Yeah, well, the first initial feeling was just kind of confused because a lot was going through my mind. Obviously, I still had a torn pec, and on top of that, you know, a lot of people were telling me that I was going to be out for the season because a torn pec is usually a 6 to 12 month recovery. So my mindset was kind of like, okay, I'm going to just take this time out to spend with my family and, you know, my girlfriend and my dog. And then when the Seahawks, you know, when they claimed me, it was sort of like, okay, I want to get back this year. Because that's what John asked me, do I want to play this year? And I told him, absolutely. I definitely want to rehab and get healthy first and then play if I'm healthy. And I'm going to do everything I can to, you know, get back on the field. So that was the mindset that I had going into it.
Let me get back. We're going to go to the good part of the story because you do make it back from the injury. You do start playing. And you start playing extremely well. Why have you fit in so well in Seattle's defense?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it's just my mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I was very deliberate with how I trained, how I rehabbed to get back. I feel like now my pec is probably stronger than it was before the surgery happened. And also, just the mental approach I had, I learned the playbook pretty much by myself. I was in the meetings. And the coaches weren't calling on me to answer questions because I wasn't playing, but I was still taking notes, still knowing the scheme, still studying at Nickelback particularly because that's where they wanted me to play at first. And I was learning the corner stuff, but I was more so focused on nickel. And I was just really being a student of the game. When they were at practice, I was watching the offense and pretty much learning offensive formations, offensive intelligence, just learning what the offense wants to do, why they get in certain formations and packages. So I really just became a student of the game. Really, for the first time, I got to sit out of football and just watch it. So I felt like that actually helped me.
We're talking to DJ Reed, Seahawks starting cornerback. You've got to love this defense. I mean, it seems from the outside watching it like it's a defense that allows you to thrive. It features your confidence. You've got to love playing for it.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, the Seattle Seahawks football utopia. You know, we have a head coach that's young and free, very outgoing. He lets you be yourself. It's very energetic. The energy here is surreal, and it's just real. It's real energy. Everyone in here, you know, is just really happy. You know, it's a great workplace. It doesn't even feel like work when we're practicing. You know, we joke a lot, but, you know, when it's time to get on the field and play, we obviously have a job to do, and we want to do that job at a high level at whatever position we're at. And we really just set the tone, I feel like, for all 32 NFL teams.
In some ways, DJ, it's pretty remarkable and took a lot of belief in yourself to get this far because coming out of high school, you went to Fresno State, and then you left after your freshman season there and ended up going to a junior college. And it probably took some faith in yourself to get you to a point where you decide to do that and then give yourself a launching pad to get to Kansas State from there.
Oh, yes, most definitely. I feel like without my journey, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. And, you know, failure isn't the final say. It's what you do after that. And I have it tatted on me. Simply put, never give up. I feel like if you have that mindset of never giving up, you're going to land somewhere that you want to be at eventually. It might not be exactly what you want, but you'll land somewhere near around it. But if you quit, then that's forever. That's a forever feeling. That's where you have regret. And I never wanted to quit. So when I was at Fresno State, it wasn't working out for me. I got my spring evaluations. They didn't see me playing corner. They just seen me contribute on special teams, hopefully getting a scholarship, maybe my senior year. And obviously I had a different viewpoint. I knew I could play corner at that level. So I made a business decision and went JUCO. Went over that with one of my mentors, Alan Thigpen, and we concluded that Cerritos Community College would be the best ideal spot for me. I played there for 1 year, got my AA degree, and I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship offer to Kansas State.
It's so awesome. You say fortunate. I'm going to say you were rewarded with the belief that you had in yourself and your ability, and to go there and showcase and then end up in the NFL. These are the kind of stories that are so awesome. You mentioned the not refusing to give up. Where do you think that comes from in your personality?
Well, for me, I would say my mom, to simply put it. You know, I've seen her go through breast cancer. I've seen her go through cardiovascular problems and really not complain. I've seen her, you know, work multiple jobs to get ends meet for me and my brother. And she doesn't complain. She works. She comes home with a smile on her face, takes care of her kids, cooks. She was cooking for us on top of working a 9-to-5. And she was consistent. That was one thing I would say. My mom was always consistent and deliberate. She didn't want to just be mediocre. And her job is actually, she helps people get jobs. And I've seen her bless a lot of people. My mom always was one of those people that, you know, would take the shirt off her back and give to someone. So I just learned a lot from my mom, really leading by action, not really telling me what to do, but me just visually seeing that at an early age, that kind of just got instilled in me of just never giving up. And whatever you do, take pride in it, whether you're working a 9-to-5, whether you're a janitor, whether you're a CEO owner, whatever you're doing, you should be deliberate and be the best you could be, because I feel like that gives you purpose at the end of the day.
She has to be so proud of you, man.
Oh, that's love. Nah, she is proud of me. I'm proud of her, too.
It's amazing what you've been able to do. DJ, it's really cool to meet you. I'm really, and like I said, I know all of Seattle is so excited to have you here for this full season. It was great watching you play last year in a year where you kind of had to work your way back onto the field. We can't wait to see what you do this season.
Thank you. That's love. I appreciate it.
That is DJ Reed. He took a heck of a route to get here, and the Seahawks are very fortunate to have him. Coming up next, we raise flags and wrap up this week on Danny and Gallant.
Or advancedhair.com.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
That's how we wrap up each show. Put a little bit of a bow on, in this case, the entire week. Seahawks off-season training program wound down with mandatory minicamps. I want to raise a flag to the Seattle Mariners. I want to raise a flag to your gritty, gutty little Mariners. It's not quite time for the Dare to Dream Express, pioneered by the Gross. It's not quite time to get aboard that train. But it is time to tip a cap in the direction of that team, which has overcome a lot of slings and arrows this season, whether it's a rash of injuries among their pitchers, some of the top prospects not hitting so well, or last night having Justin Dunn, your starting pitcher, leave the game after two innings, falling behind against the American League leading Tampa Bay Rays, then going into the teeth of what might be the game's best bullpen, in which they have dude after dude who pumps upper 90s fastballs, and finding a way to slug their way out of it, whether it was Luis Torrens hitting an absolute bomb, Ty France with a two-run homer, and then the biggest blow in the game in my mind, which was Shed Long's one-out, two-strike double the other way that tied the game at 5-5, and then the Mariners end up winning it when Kyle Seager, on his day off, singled in the game winner. The Mariners take a lot of skepticism and cynicism, and to be honest, the franchise has earned it. I want to salute what that team is doing, though, because the fact that they're a game under 500, giving everything that's happened, is a real testament to how hard that team is fighting. They're fighting. I don't know if they're going to be good enough to have a winning record this year. I know that they're good enough that whatever they finish with, they will have more wins than they should have because of how hard they fight and how tough they are. That was a really, really... It was a gutty performance last night. Good for them.
I am going to raise a flag to the U.S. Open. You guys know I'm a golfer, but specifically Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. I love the drama. I love the pettiness. Golf needed this, and I'm here for it. All my golfers out there, go ahead and watch U.S. Open today, and let's pay attention to the Brooks and DeChambeau drama. Love it.
I got some questions on this. First of all, I'm Team Koepka all day. Bryson DeChambeau is annoying, and he's a try-hard guy. He doesn't know how to kid. Is it possible this is being not staged but embellished? Like, is it possible that these guys have beef because it's good for their business? I'm starting to wonder, because you never see people roll their eyes in public at each other and sort of go back. There's part of me that wonders if this is embellished a little bit.
I think it's genuine, but I think that now they're like, okay, this is going to make us some money. Let's keep this rolling. Now they're just being out with it. I don't like them. I'm rolling my eyes. You got DeChambeau video bombing Koepka's interview yesterday.
Yep.
They know what they're doing now. I think initially it started. It was genuine. And it is genuine. But they're benefiting from this, so they're going to keep it rolling.
So it's kind of like a, hey, we don't really like each other, but we don't hate each other so bad that we'd be constantly clowning each other, but we're going to keep doing it because it's good for our profiles. Like, for this sure would actually generate some interest.
Yep.
So it's not like 50 Cent and Ja Rule, which was an actual personal beef.
50 Cent and Ja. That was a great beef.
Dude, that was a brutal beef.
50 ruined his career.
It did. He destroyed him. Like, it was now what do you know about Ja Rule? Ja Rule's involved in Firefest. 50 Cent's acting in movies. It's like 50 just killed him. Is in this, it's probably Koepka that would be 50, right? 50?
I don't think anyone's career is gonna hurt from this. I think they're still good golfers. Like, they're still good golfers, no matter what. It's not like 50 ruined his career. Like, Ja didn't put out a hit after 50 went after him. DeChambeau's going to win some tournaments. He's still going to win some tournaments.
Are you sure? DeChambeau might have a little tiny T-Rex brain, though. Like, he might have a little tiny dinosaur brain. I know he's big and strong and stuff. There's part of me that feels like he's not going to be able to handle this, and he might break.
Maybe. Maybe he's really smart, and he's just playing a character. And he's fooling us, because his swing is all about geometry. Like, he breaks it down. Like, it's very scientific what he does. So he might be one of those smart guys who's pretending to be dumb.
He's just one of those people that doesn't have social skills. We've played quite a few cuts now where he doesn't get the joke.
It's possible, though, what Bump says is right, that he's pretending to not have social skills. Like, I've been a fan of UFC and a fan of boxing. I've been a fan of fighting too long to underestimate the ability of someone to create a character to sell. Like, it happens. And it would be enormously successful in other sports where you don't see it. If you truly don't care about being liked, if you truly don't mind fans hating you or other players being annoyed at you, like, you can make a lot of money. Yeah. You can make a lot of money, but you have to really not care what people say about you.
You know who's going to embrace that and is going to make money, who has been embracing it? Trae Young. I think he's fallen right into that. And just embrace it. You'll make money.
I've taken to calling him Scam Basketball. He plays Scam Basketball. Like, you know, you have Scammers and Scam Rap.
Yeah.
Like, he's Scam Basketball. He's just scamming calls out there. Maura, what do you got?
All right, I'm going to raise a flag for one of my favorite moments on the station this week. I don't know if you guys heard this, but I think it was Wednesday. Bob from Wyman and Bob had his dog, Frank, had an issue with his paw. He had to take him to the vet. And I think he was just trying to get to the show quicker, and maybe Frank still needed some watching. So he actually brought him in studio. And Wyman was trying to do a live read. A spot that we have that is read live during the break. And Frank decided to chime in, and Wyman's reaction is great.
CyberKnife is not a surgical treatment. Whoa. And it's a robotic radio surgery system.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Frank's a little dog. That's a fairly big bark for such a little dog.
Get him, Frank.
Oh, that's great. Wyman doesn't like loud noises either.
No, that's true.
Two things that Wyman does not like: onions and loud noises.
So when when his kids were young, it just drove him crazy then, huh? Was,
yes.
Shut up.
I think he spent hours in the bathroom because it was his fortress of solitude. Can count on nobody yelling at him. That is going to do it for us here on the show in this week. Thank you to DJ Reed for sitting down with us and the Professor John Clayton for the morning drive and Jeff Schwartz, who was fun to talk to. Maura Dooley always does such a great job on keeping us on the straight and narrow and putting a smile on the show. And Michael Bumpus, it's always great to work with you, Bob.
Same here, baby. We're going to do it again, right? Do we do it again Monday?
We do it again. Yes. Michael Bumpus will be back on Monday for Danny and Gallant, and you're in good hands for the next hour, the most interactive show in Seattle sports radio. Michael Bumpus, the Paul Gallant Show, coming up next.